Deuteronomy chapter 5, just want to focus on verse 21. Neither must you covet your neighbor's wife, neither shall you desire your neighbor's house, fields, servants, donkeys, or anything that is your neighbor's. The law of Moses was the only legal code to criminalize internal attitudes. You must not covet. You must not internally desire anything that is not yours. There was no legal apparatus to discover whether somebody had broken that or not. How do you know whether someone's coveted anything? You don't know. And there was no way to judge it, to punish it in this life. Now you see there a tacit reflection of the way that God's law is indeed his law, because he alone can read the hidden attitudes of people's minds, and he alone can judge them and will punish them at the last day. So, not coveting. You see, the whole essence of God's law to us, and it's the same in the New Testament, is his desire for an attitude of mind, for us to be spiritually minded. It's who you are when nobody's looking. What you think about as you walk down the street, as you lay awake at night before you go to sleep, the things you think about as soon as you wake up. What do you think about subconsciously as you dream, whatever you do when you're asleep? This is of utmost importance to God. Now, this command not to covet, of course, really is always alluding back to what Eve did. She saw the fruit. She looked at it. She coveted it, and she gave in to temptation. Now, the sin of Adam and Eve in Eden was really the sin of every man. This is the pattern that we sadly follow. So when they were told, you shall not covet, neither shall you desire, this is the same word used of how Eve desired the fruit in Genesis 3. And you, as I say, you see this all the way through the Bible, that account of Adam and Eve's sin and the internal processes within them. Eve looked, she desired, she took. This is going on all the time in human life, and it's repeatedly alluded to in the biblical record. For example, the 2.5 tribes, they had been given, potentially, all the land west of the Jordan River. But they saw the land east of Jordan. They imagined how good it would be to have just that land and to have it immediately, and they desired it. And so they took it. And so the insistent emphasis is to not be like that. And it calls, of course, for personal effort and struggle within ourselves in order to overcome that tendency to covet. Now, all that absolutely necessary struggle within ourselves and that personal effort to think otherwise and to mentally be otherwise is all rather muted and sort of put out of place if you think that actually there was a person called the devil tempting Eve, the same person that tempts you, and you push all the blame onto that external being. I think you miss then the whole point, that the struggle is within, that the great battle is not up in the cosmos. It's not between you and some hard-to-define external being of evil. It's within you. Do not covet. Do not desire. We know what James says, that this is how sin starts. You covet, you desire, it gives birth to the thought gives birth to sinful actions. So to be spiritually minded is absolutely critical. And I would argue, and maybe I'm getting on the philosophical level here, but all the same, I would argue that it is impossible for anyone to resist the desire to covet unless you've got something else to desire. In other words, someone who, for example, is a pure atheist is going to see things and covet them and desire them in the wrong sense, because there is nothing to counterbalance. Desire and wish, desire to have that which you do not currently have, is wired into us. It's almost sort of, well, it is part of us. And yet our desires, our coveting as a believer, are to be for the things of God's kingdom, the things of Jesus. You see, you've got to have an alternative. You cannot just walk down a street or walk through life, oh, I mustn't covet, oh, I mustn't desire that. What an empty person that would be. I just don't think it's actually possible to obey that, to not covet, to not desire that which is not currently yours, unless you've got an alternative. As I say, in the mind of the pure atheist, I desire that woman, that man, that car, that whatever it might be, and it is not mine. So I shall scheme to get it. Whereas for us as believers, I desire that. The thought crops into the mind, but no, I desire the things of God, the things of God's kingdom, the relationship with Jesus, not with that man or that woman, not that car, not all this stuff on this earth. Our heart, our desires are with God. That is what we covet more than anything. And so I just think it's beautiful, this sort of internal psychological harmonization within God's entire self-revelation, that you must not covet, neither shall you desire what is not yours. I don't see that that's possible to obey that on a psychological level, on a deep internal level, unless you are a believer. And of course, these laws about how you should think, of course, they are for those who are in covenant relationship with God.